If your toddler has been diagnosed with autism or is waiting for a diagnosis, you're going to want to pay attention for the next 60 seconds. Happy Ladders is parent-led early autism therapy that empowers you, the parent, to teach your toddler essential developmental skills through play. Studies have shown that the parent-led model is highly effective while eliminating frustration over long wait lists or the worry about losing precious developmental time, all without the disruption of people coming into your home. Happy Ladders includes activities that target 150 essential developmental skills every toddler needs, as well as assessments in four different developmental areas. There's also an exclusive community of parents just like you and professional coaching to ensure success for both you and your toddler. To learn more, get a free trial, and take advantage of an exclusive limited-time offer for my listeners, visit happyladders.com. That's HappyLadders. Use the code TheAutismDad at checkout to save 50% off the monthly membership. Plus, get a free one-on-one session as well as access to the Tantrums and Meltdown mini course. This is a limited time offer, so act now. If your toddler has been diagnosed with autism or is waiting for a diagnosis, you're going to want to pay attention for the next 60 seconds. Happy Ladders is parent-led early autism therapy that empowers you, the parent, to teach your toddler essential developmental skills through play. Studies have shown that the parent-led model is highly effective while eliminating frustration over long wait lists or the worry about losing precious developmental time, all without the disruption of people coming into your home. Happy Ladders includes activities that target 150 essential developmental skills every toddler needs, as well as assessments in four different developmental areas. There's also an exclusive community of parents just like you and professional coaching to ensure success for both you and your toddler. To learn more, get a free trial, and take advantage of an exclusive limited-time offer for my listeners, visit happyladders.com. That's HappyLadders. Use the code TheAutismDad at checkout to save 50% off the monthly membership. Plus, get a free one-on-one session as well as access to the Tantrums and Meltdown mini course. This is a limited time offer, so act now. I'm Rob Gorski, and you're listening to the Autism Dad podcast.
The Autism Dad is brought to you by Anchor. If you haven't heard about Anchor, it's the easiest way to make a podcast. Let me explain. First of all, it's free, which is awesome. There are creation tools that allow you to record and edit your podcast right from your phone or computer, which means no fancy equipment, and that's super convenient. Anchor will also distribute your podcast for you so it can be heard on Spotify, Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts, all the popular apps out there. And you can even begin making money from your podcast right away because there's no minimum listenership required to start monetizing. So that's cool as well. It's everything you need to make a podcast in one place. Download the free Anchor app or go to anchor.fm to get started. That's anchor.fm to get started.
Hey, folks. I appreciate you guys tuning in this week. What I need to do this time around is a follow-up to last week's episode called Untethered from Reality. I had been talking about managing my oldest son's current sort of crisis situation that he was in. He's 19. He is autistic and schizophrenic and has a bunch of other health issues, serious health issues. And we had to wean him off of the medication that he was on called clozapine because he'd started having reactions to it over the last couple of years. And it got to the point where we had to take him off of it in order to really assess where he was, figure out what symptoms were actually related to the medication and what were just sort of like a natural evolution of what he's going through. So when we left off last week, I was waiting to hear back from the doctor about whether or not what to do about Gavin's situation. He had been off the meds for a couple of days and just sort of right off the deep end. I mean, the delusions came in such, it was so much more intense, so much more significant. And it showed us that the meds actually had been working. And we were seeing things that were very concerning. You know, he wasn't sleeping at night. He was up doing missions all night. He was getting into some kind of weird sort of delusions of grandeur, kind of scary / creepy, uncomfortable kind of things. And his doctor had gotten back to me shortly after I had recorded last week's episode and said we need to get him back on the meds. So we put him on, he was supposed to go back on the same dose that he was on before because we didn't want to go any higher because they were the side effects would likely be worse. So he went back on 300 milligrams of clozapine. We were supposed to do it at night because he was he was leaving his bed at night and running missions and hearing voices that were telling him to do things and stuff like that. And so the idea behind putting him in, on that at night was to help him sleep through the night, keep him safe, keep everybody else safe until we sort of got the medication back in the system. It shouldn't have been a problem. 300 milligrams is a historically low dose for Gavin. He had been on 800 milligrams for a very, very long time, which is insanely high, but it's only because of the way he metabolizes medications. They have to have him on a higher dose because it burns through his system faster than his body can sort of utilize the medication to correct whatever it needs to correct. So this shouldn't have had an impact. He had taken his first dose back, you know, he'd gone back on meds last Friday at like 9 p.m. at bedtime. A couple hours later, around midnight, we started hearing noise in his bedroom, a bunch of banging around and stuff like that. And we assumed, as we had been dealing with previously, that he had woken up and was running missions. And so we just sort of let it go because there's not really anything we can do about it. If he had gotten any louder, we would, you know, go upstairs and have him keep it down so he didn't wake up his brothers. And so a little bit of time goes by. Next thing we know, we hear a big thump in the hallway. And so I run upstairs, and he's laying on the floor in the hallway, completely disoriented. I mean, we're talking like he was trying to talk, but all he made were noises. He was drooling profusely, which is unusual because he has chronic dry mouth, which actually causes him some problems. And so he shouldn't even be able to drool. He had lost control of other bodily functions. He couldn't sit up. He couldn't hold his head up. He couldn't talk. When he was laying back on the floor, he was choking on the saliva in his mouth. And so I was concerned about, you know, his airway, trying to sit him up. Like if I sat him up, he would just flop over. Because like he could not control his body. You know, he would try to stand up and then just sort of like veer off to the side and sort of fall into the wall or something. And he was pretty contained in the hallway. So he wasn't really unsafe as far as that. I mean, I kept him sort of in a corner sitting up so that his airway was less compromised, while we sort of figured out what was going on and decided what we needed to do. Ultimately, we ended up calling 911 for a couple reasons. One, I didn't feel comfortable managing this at home. I was a medic for a while, and I've seen a lot of things. I was not comfortable managing this at home, especially because of his airway. The rest of it, whatever, the airway was what my primary concern was. He has so many other health issues that this could have been anything. We sort of assumed it was the clozapine, just sort of like a bad reaction or his body overreacted to it. But there was no way to know for sure. You know, it could have been a blood sugar issue. We couldn't test his blood at home. I mean, he's not diabetic, so we don't have a historic problem with that. But it could have been, you know, it was very similar to someone who is hypoglycemic. So that could have been a problem. He could have had a seizure and it just wasn't witnessed. He has epilepsy and he just had a seizure that we didn't witness, and he was postictal, and that could have been what happened. He could have had an autonomic crisis, which he's had countless times, and they all sort of present the same way. There was no way for us to know, and the safest, most responsible thing to do at that point was to call 911. So Liz called 911, and Gavin was sort of managed in the corner. At the same time, I'm trying to get his brothers up and moving, because I didn't want them to be woken by lights and siren and police coming in the house and fire trucks and ambulances. That would have been a bad thing. So I woke them up. I explained they have to get dressed because Gavin has to go to the hospital and they're going to their grandma's house. Elliot did pretty well with it. He was very sort of proactive about getting ready and doing what he could to help out, even though we were trying to shield him from this. Emmett just sort of broke down and sobbed. It was heartbreaking. But there was nothing that I could do to really comfort him because I had to keep Gavin safe. And Liz was on the phone with the dispatch, so she couldn't do anything. Elliot was trying. It was just awful. My dad had shown up because we had talked to Liz had talked to my dad before I decided that we needed to call 911. He actually got here right before the ambulance did, and so he was helping me to try and sort of keep Gavin under control and sort of manage the boys. The ambulance arrived. They had sent police out, I think for a couple of reasons. One, because Liz mentioned that he was autistic, and so, you know, you could be dealing with someone who may be combative or something. I mean, they don't know, and so safety comes first. And then I think the other issue was that she had said that she suspects it was medication-related, and so then they assume overdose, and so the police respond to that anyways. And then they take reports and document what happened, whatever. The cop was awesome. He was so good about everything. Very compassionate. I really very impressed with how well he handled the situation. And recognized that Gavin wasn't a threat to anyone or anything like that. And he kept apologizing for having to be there. But you know, he had to document things because it could have been medication related. And so he got some information while the medics were bringing Gavin downstairs and getting him into the ambulance. I went with them in the ambulance to the hospital. Liz waited until her parents came to pick up the boys, and then my dad brought Liz to the hospital to be with us. So we were in the ER for a little while. I was a little bit uncomfortable because, you know, when they knew that he was autistic, and that there were mental health issues, and they didn't do anything wrong. They did a really good job, but they had security there because they were concerned that he might be combative and things like that. And I don't know. I didn't like that, but I understand why they make those assumptions. So it was cool. And the cops, you know, the cop was there and, you know, he explained that everything was fine. Gavin's not combative. He's just out of it right now with whatever's going on. And so, you know, they sort of got him sort of stabilized, and when they sort of assessed him and realized that he has other health complications, so they put him into a different room where they can monitor him more closely. Ultimately, he was admitted. They were concerned that he had had a stroke because of his slurring of his speech, whatever, so they wanted to rule that out. So he had a CT scan, and we were there for 12 or 13 hours in the neuro floor, like the stroke floor. His vitals were unstable. His heart rate was really high. His blood pressure was really high, which could be a sign that it was not an autonomic crisis. But again, there was no way to know. And there's nothing, you know, even if it was an autonomic crisis, there's nothing you can do for it. It's sort of supportive care, you know, like oxygen and fluids and stuff like that. That's about it. You can't do anything else. The body just has to sort of kick back in, I guess, if that makes sense. Like the gears have to catch. And, you know, so it was scary because we didn't know what to expect. We didn't know what we were dealing with. And, you know, Gavin, he was very frustrated. You could see he was frustrated because he was trying to talk and he couldn't. He was trying to move, but he couldn't gracefully move. I mean, Gavin's not super graceful anyways. Coordination is not one of his strong suits. But, I mean, he would try and pick something up or reach for something, and his arm would just fly off to the side. I mean, he had no control over his body, and that was very frustrating for him. It was heartbreaking for us to see that too. And so it was just a terrible situation. As the night went on, you know, they did multiple rounds of blood work. You know, they found that he had something like his potassium was low, but that really isn't related to anything. And so they addressed that, and the CT scan came back clean, and you know, his urine tests were clean. I mean, they're looking at blood sugar things and stuff like that, and everything was fine. So it was basically decided that we were correct in the sense that it was a clozapine, and he essentially was over-medicated. His body reacted as though he was over-medicated. The dose that he was on should not have caused that reaction because he's been on that dose for a long time. So it shouldn't have been an issue. And it's actually historically a very low dose for him. Like I said, I think before he was on 800 milligrams,
for a long time, and that barely even took the edge off for him. And that's a serious, serious dose of clozapine. We had to have special permission from the FDA to use that. You know, it shouldn't have happened. So I don't look at his doctor as making a mistake or us really making a mistake. There was no way to know that he was going to have a different reaction this time than what he's had in the past. And you know, we sort of live and we learn, unfortunately. And you know, ultimately, I think by like 7 or 8 o'clock the following morning, he was really starting to kind of come out of that state that he was in. And he was more coherent, and he was finally able to talk without slurring his words. He had sort of regained control over his body. He wasn't losing control of his, you know, his bladder and things like that anymore. So he was okay. We ended up meeting with a couple of doctors. The psych team came down, and the medical staff was in, and the nurses. They were all really great with him. They took really good care of him. You know, this was sort of an unusual thing, I think. I don't know that they've seen anything like this, because, I mean, nobody's seen anybody like Gavin. He's very unique and very complex, sort of breaks the mold in every area, which is frustrating because we can never really figure anything out. But, you know, thankfully he pulled out of it, and he's sort of back at his baseline. You know, he's back on the clozapine. In fact, today he's back up to 300 milligrams and he's not having any reactions to the meds. So he's okay with that. We think what happened was, you know, he just wasn't able to handle going right back on that dose. And so we split it up over 4 or 5 days and got him back up slowly. And he's been fine. I don't know that it's working because he is just as delusional now as he was when we realized he needed to go back on the meds. So we're not real sure what to do with that. We follow up with his psychiatrist, I think, next week. I don't know what we're going to do. But physically, he's good. So we don't have that to worry about. And we're very grateful for that. And you know, everybody was really good with him and, you know, very patient and understanding. And it's not easy to find that, truthfully. I mean, a lot of times when you're dealing with mental health issues or they hear, you know, that your child has autism or something like that, you tend to sort of not get that kind of treatment. You know, people don't understand or they don't have the patience. And we've been very lucky that, you know, the hospitals around us, especially at the Cleveland Clinic and Akron Children's, they are really good with our kids. So we're very, very grateful for that. I think that, you know, we have to sort of let the dust settle at this point and see sort of where we are, maybe in a week or so and decide what we're going to do. I don't think that we can go any higher than 300. I don't think we can. I mean, maybe we can. I don't know. We have to talk to his doctor. He may just need more time on the meds to sort of stabilize him. But, you know, the stuff that he is in a constantly delusional state, delusions of grandeur. I mean, he's not a danger to anybody right now, but I am concerned about some of the content in the missions that he's doing and some of the choices that he's making in the missions. He's always the good guy. He's always, whatever happens is happening to a bad guy, but it's getting a little bit darker and it's making me uncomfortable, the level that he's taking some of these battles to. And I don't know. It's probably nothing to worry about. It's unnerving for me, and we'll have to talk to his doctor and see what we do next week.
The Autism Dad is brought to you by Anchor. Anchor is a one-stop shop for recording, hosting, and distributing your podcast. Best of all, it is 100% free, and it is ridiculously easy to use. And now, Anchor can match you with great sponsors who want to advertise on your podcast. That means you get paid to podcast right away. In fact, that's what I'm doing right now by reading this ad. So if you have always wanted to start your own podcast and you want to get paid to do it, go to anchor.fm/start. That's anchor.fm/start.
I just wanted to sort of follow up with that because, you know, we had talked about managing the crisis, and I had no idea that was going to happen. And so we had to adapt sort of in the moment and address something that we hadn't planned on addressing. And because it sort of tied in with what we were talking about last week and it sort of completed the story, I wanted to sort of finish that off this week. I'd written about it a few times, but, you know, I wanted to finish it out here because, you know, my listeners don't always read, readers don't always listen. So I just think this was a good way to sort of tie it up and put it behind us. I'm hoping that it can be sort of a teaching moment for people, you know, how to handle situations, maybe what happens when something like this happens. You know, there are medical crises, there are mental health crises, and this was sort of a combination of both, and it sort of is what it is. So again, we'll wait until next week and see what happens, and then just sort of manage what we can until then. So I appreciate all of the love and support that we've received via social media or direct messages or phone calls, whatever. I really appreciate it, guys. It was pretty scary. We didn't know what to expect, and there was no way to know what the outcome was going to be. So we're very grateful for the way that it worked out. Very grateful for all the love and support. I really appreciate you guys tuning in and listening. You can follow me at theautismdad.com. All my social links are at the top right. Really only use Twitter, so if you need me, you can find me there or email me from my site. You can listen to this podcast on every one of the major podcasting apps out there. Please hit the subscribe button. It really helps to support my efforts. Really appreciate that. And I will talk to you guys next week. Thanks.
Autistic kids can sometimes struggle to learn new skills, such as riding a bike, reading, or simply having a conversation to a high level of proficiency and automaticity. Brainiac is a brain enhancement program that gets to the root of the problem. It builds stronger brain and body connections that elevate learning capacity within 4 to 6 months. Brainiac cross-trains motor movement, visual, auditory, and cognitive thinking connections using fun, interactive video games. Strengthened connections allow kids to learn new skills and perform them automatically with more confidence and greater independence. Brainiac is for homes and schools. Visit KINUU.com, that's KINUU.com, and be sure to use the code THEAUTISMDAD at checkout to save $500. It's a limited time offer and it will expire on May 31st.